T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
Mike Florio is at Pro Football Talk. He of Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you hanging in, Mike?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. And this was a very powerful piece that you just posted to Pro Football Talk. And the first line of the third graph is, I think, what stands out with me. And you wrote, "The team that is named for the nation's capital at a time when the nation's capital has become one of the flashpoints for protests should acknowledge that the franchise's nickname is a textbook racial slur." And I'll admit, I hadn't really thought about it. It wasn't top of mind for me. And it's a team name that I have tried to avoid saying now for going on 3 years, because I'm not comfortable with it, and nor should people be. But what motivated you to do this now?
Well, it's very simple. I hadn't made the connection. I wish I had. But when the franchise decided to participate in the Blackout Tuesday movement yesterday and was grilled repeatedly in response to their tweet with the all-black image that everyone was using when participating in that movement, that's when it dawned on me that if we're opposed to racism, it's not just racism as it relates to one minority group. Racism is racism. And if there are racist aspects of any portion of society, and as it relates to the Washington NFL team, a dictionary-defined racial slur has been applied to the name of that team in plain sight for years now. And the late Charles Krauthammer, who was a conservative columnist, put it best. Sometimes through the passage of time, words change. Words that were acceptable in the 70s are not acceptable now. Words that were acceptable after that, at some point through the passage of time, we just don't use those words anymore. And this is a word that has become recognized, and maybe it should have been from the get-go, but at some point in the past 40 years, it's been recognized as a dictionary-defined slur. And at a time when it's very easy for people to say that they are against racism, that they are against the murder of African Americans and people of color by police officers, when do we turn that into action? And what could the NFL do? What is the one thing that the NFL could do to rectify, as I said, a racially charged name that is hiding in plain sight? Think of the impact. It's not going to happen. But think of the impact that the NFL could have on society. If Daniel Snyder were to hold a video conference call today and say, "I was wrong, and it took this moment to wake me up. It took this moment for my eyes to open. And in this moment, I recognize that all racism is bad. And I recognize that even if it is only 10% of Native Americans who are offended by this, and I still reject the poll that found that the number was only 10%, even if it's only 10%, 10% is too many. This name is wrong, and I am changing this name, and I am doing it in honor of the memory of George Floyd, and I am doing it because it's the right thing to do, and I am doing it because I oppose all forms of racism. Wouldn't think of the impact if Daniel Snyder had the foresight, the wisdom, and the compassion for others to do that.
Is it merely stubbornness and territoriality? But why? Why is it so important to Snyder and in extension to fans that the name be retained?
Well, fans had been able to compartmentalize, I think, the name from what the name technically means. In their mind, it's the name of a football team, period. It's not a slur, it's just the name of a football team. And I think one of the reasons Snyder has been so stubborn about it is because it's the one thing that he can get his fans to praise him for. Daniel Snyder coming out strong, owning the libs on the issue of the team nickname. I mean, they hate him as it relates to the quality of the football team he's given them over the last 20 years, but they love him whenever he stands up and says, basically, over my dead body will I change the name of the team. And at some point in the next 100 years, the name of that team will change. And history will look, I think, very poorly on those who defended the name. Really beyond 2013 is when it really came to a head. I know that's when it came to a head for me. And I can't remember what the issue was or what the moment was, but let's say 2010. If you're not on board after 2010, history is not going to look poor, favorably on you. And it is going to change. This is the perfect time to do it. But I think it is stubbornness. It's that billionaire privilege, right? You don't have people around you telling you when you are doing something stupid or when you should consider doing something a different way. That's the biggest problem of having money and power. You end up surrounding yourself with sycophants because, you know what, if you have people around you who are telling things you don't want to hear, you find somebody else to do those jobs. And that's why I think it's important for anyone in a position of power and influence to have someone who can talk to them frankly and candidly and say, what you are doing is dumb. Do something different.
And even outside of the billionaires, there are those in the NFL and elsewhere that don't know how to ask questions or what questions to ask or to whom to ask them. One of those appears to be Vic Fangio, where Vic Fangio met with reporters and gave us, you know, well, I don't really see racism. It's the NFL. It's a meritocracy. We got all kinds of different people around here, and we don't have any of that. Not, and it made it sound like these players don't then leave the facility and get in their cars and drive home with the very same fears that anyone else does, regardless of what they do for a living. His own safety, Kareem Jackson, it told the very same reporters a story about being pulled over by police because his car was just seemingly too nice. And it just it made my blood boil to hear the passive, obtuse ignorance of Vic Fangio not having actually talked to these players behind whom he seems to be hiding.
Well, and I think the problem for Vic Fangio was that he was making, I believe, a very specific narrow point that once you have your team in a locker room, once you have your guys, it's not about race. It's about the best players. It's a meritocracy. The best players are on the field. And really, at this point, now maybe there was a time not that long ago when race was a factor, especially when it comes to quarterback decisions, but I'd like to think the general managers and coaches now are acting out of one specific motivation, winning enough games so they don't get fired. And the race of the players simply doesn't matter within the confines of putting the best players on the team. I think that was his point. But when you speak in broad terms and when you utter the phrase, I don't see discrimination in the NFL, you invite people to misconstrue what your specific point is. And it becomes more generally dissected because you used broad general terms. So I get the point he was trying to make. And would he have made it a little more artfully if he had a chance to do it again? Probably so, because I think he was only talking about, you know, what it comes down to when it's time to put guys on the football field. It's not about race. It's about the best players, and let's go out there and let's be a brotherhood together and let's try to win football games.
I was compelled to write about the NFL statement over the weekend that they put out, because when I saw it, my jaw just dropped. I'm like, oh, come on. No, 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 not this. You can't be the same league that put your anti-protest rules in and stand for the flag rules in and now say, well, we're with the peaceful protesters. We stand with peaceful. No, you don't. You clearly don't, and you never did. And my worry now is that we're going to see the typical NFL playbook of adding some sort of warmed over, quote unquote, commitment that just ends up being part of their brand, like they've done with everything else, like they've done with Ray Rice. So they come up with a color of a ribbon and they get some generalized charity and they turn it into the equivalent of a flyover and essentially buy it out and make the noise die down. Now, how do NFL fans hold them to some of this stuff and keep them from doing what they do and just and watering it down and turning it into a PR aspect of their brand?
Well, the problem is, if you're the NFL, and some of this came out during the Colin Kaepernick litigation against the league, which fans are you concerned about? Which fans are you listening to? There was a study that was done, and I think it was produced as part of the Kaepernick litigation, that the number of fans who were loudly opposed to the Kaepernick protest was offset by an equal number of fans who were in favor of the Kaepernick protest, but the league chose to listen to and heed and fear the potential fallout from those who were vehemently opposed to the protest. So in this moment, do they ignore those same people who, if the league says, you know what, we were wrong, we encourage players to take a knee during the national anthem if they believe that that is the platform of choice for them to express their concerns about issues with systemic discrimination in society. I don't think that's coming, right? What do you do? That's the challenge for the NFL. What do you do when you ultimately are concerned about the bottom line, but you feel like you have to do something because society is forcing you to do something? The expectations of your players is forcing you to do something. What can you do now to placate the people who are demanding change while also not alienating that 30% that you allowed to dictate your policy 3 years ago? I hope that they ultimately do the right thing and say, screw the people who don't like it. We are going to do what we are going to do, and we are going to do what we think is right. And I don't think it's enough to say, well, it's awful that George Floyd was murdered. I think that they need to say, in this moment of change, how will we be part of the effort to get others to change, and what will we do to change ourselves? And we'll see. We'll see. If they come out and admit that they were wrong about Kaepernick, if the Washington team nickname changes, great. Anything less than that, though, it's all part of that financial calculation that every big business does. Hey, we have to take a stand. Let's just make sure that the stand we take doesn't cost us money.
I saw one argument being made that this is the time for the Minnesota Vikings themselves to sign Colin Kaepernick. And I'm of two minds of this, that obviously the man has deserved a job and is probably for sure still better than many of the quarterbacks on rosters in the league. I also don't want it to be in and of itself a form of tokenism, a form of, hey, look, we signed him, therefore, you know, we've got our human shield here, we're now good people, we're fixing things. And I don't know how to feel. I'm so torn, because I don't know if I would trust the signing of Kaepernick as a move that was genuinely made to make the football team better, genuinely made to heal, and there would be some sort of twisted symbolism that might not be taken the right way.
Well, here's the thing. The argument from former NFL spokesman Joe Lockhart that the Vikings should sign Colin Kaepernick because Minnesota is the epicenter of this current crisis is the ultimate superficial PR flack idea. Right. It ignores the practicalities. It ignores the poisoned relationship between Kaepernick and the NFL, dating back to his lawsuit, the settlement of the lawsuit, and that ridiculous dog and pony show last November that blew up in everyone's face, with both sides to blame for the effort to create this workout, this joint workout where anyone can come watch Kaepernick, when anyone can bring him in for a workout whenever they want to, and no one still has to this day. So if I'm Kaepernick and my phone rings today and my agent says, hey, the Vikings want to talk to you about a contract, my first reaction is going to be something profane. because it's obvious that if it happens now, it's being done for PR purposes. My question and my curiosity is what happens once we get into football season this year, when there's another Ben Roethlisberger elbow injury week two, a Cam Newton foot injury week two, somebody who's out for the season, somebody who's positive for COVID. What happens? Does Kaepernick's phone ring this time? Does he get a real workout? Does he get a real opportunity? I don't know. I don't think so. I think the window has closed, unfortunately, by the passage of time. It's easy to say now he hasn't played in 3.5 years, but I would be, at a minimum, if I were Colin Kaepernick, very, very leery about any efforts in the short term by any team to show interest in me and sign me, because it would feel like it's just part of this broader effort to try to score PR points.
He actually has moved so far above and beyond a role as a football player that maybe it's stopped being as important. And maybe that's the lesson that we can learn as we're sort of understanding the new world we live in that's being reshaped in a lot of ways by forces beyond our control, and some confluences of what the COVID pandemic is doing to what we are seeing and what we're consuming and how we are consuming it. It's not coincidental that some of our awakening on race is occurring because we're not being distracted by work or sports or anything else. Maybe Colin Kaepernick we're all better served with him continuing to do what he's done and be an activist and fundraiser and head of his foundation.
But it would be great if he could do both. It would be great to see him back on a football field. That would, if it could be done in a way that is genuine, that is real, and he's going to have to give some too on this. You know, I don't know what his financial expectations currently are, but the fact that he hasn't played in 3 years, I mean, look, if the Vikings would be interested, and Gary Kubiak, the offensive coordinator, was the head coach in Denver when they flirted with trading for him in 2016. So he fits the offense, but they can't pay him more than the minimum, right? I mean, if somebody does offer him a job at some point this year, it's not like he can say, I want $20 million or $10 million. He's going to have to take what he can get for the opportunity to come back if that opportunity presents itself. So both sides are going to have to give. There's a lot of harm and damage that needs to be undone, but I think it would be great for both. I think it would be just it's not going to happen. I think it's even less likely to happen than the Washington franchise changing its nickname at any point in the next couple of years. But I think it would be great for him to have his platform and return to the NFL if there was a way for both sides to work it out.
Mike Florio, great stuff as always.
See you,
Thank you. That's Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Strong stuff today from him. When we come back, I want you to hear a harrowing story, because we have to. We have to listen to every word of this, and we need to understand it. Got to hear it, got to understand it. And it's a story told by Brittany Payton, the daughter of Walter Payton, about something that happened to her, and I think it's something that we need to amplify. Because that's what we've been doing, whether it's the statement from Jonathan Toews, the statement from Ben and Jerry's, or hearing some stories from people who experience things that we don't. I'm going to read you Braden Holtby's statement a little bit later on, too, because it's one thing that when, you know, we start this out every day as things are going on now, I think we have a responsibility to amplify certain messages, because it's ultimately better for everybody. And we're going to do that next. It's painful, but it's important. So we're going to hear from Brittany Payton when we come back on The Score.
This is Chicago's number one sports station, dominating Chicago sports talk for nearly three decades. 670 The Score is Chicago sports. Chicago sports is 670 The Score. Radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago sports station.
Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 WSCR. The Score. A little bit of news before we get to some of the sound you got to hear. Adrian Wojnarowski just tweeted, the NBA's Board of Governors has a 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time call tomorrow with the intention of approving the league's plan for a 22-team return to play in Orlando. That's ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski tweeting that the intention on this call tomorrow is to finalize and approve, to put the official stamp on their return to play, which with 22 teams, I believe that number means we can actually put the final nail in the Chicago Bulls of 2020, whatever that was. And probably that would be the cue to Arturis Karnishevas and Mark Eversley that it is now time to then move on from Jim Boylan, because there won't be a season this year. And even had there been, he shouldn't have been head coach there. So it's my hope that when this becomes official, the Bulls will move on that. But I wanted you to hear this. I want all of us to hear this. Listen to this. Don't just hear it. Listen to it. Feel it. This was posted to Facebook last night, or to Twitter, I believe, initially. It's Brittany Payton, and Brittany Payton has been a TV personality here in Chicago. She is the daughter of Walter Payton and the sister of Jarrett Payton. And the message simply said, she tweeted, "This happened to me in Chicago today. This posted yesterday. This happened here yesterday."
So I haven't posted anything in a couple of days, and I think a lot of it is just because it's just been so sad to see what is happening in this country right now, what's happening in our city right now. You know, a city that I was born and raised in and that I absolutely love. And what prompted me to actually pull this out is because something just happened to me that I wasn't sure if I was gonna say anything, but I actually called my brother and I told him about what happened. And he said, "No, B, you have to say something, because people just need to know what it's like and what happens. And it's real." I went to the store. I haven't left my house in days. And I went to Walgreens to just get some sinus medicine because my allergies are bad and things aren't feeling that great. And we're out at the house. So my mom, who's been staying with us, decided to drive with me. It was nice to just get out. It's a beautiful day outside. So we're at the drive-thru at the Walgreens, which is in my neighborhood. And I'm sitting there and I gave them my ID and my driver's license to get the medicine. I signed the form and we're just waiting because, you know, it's busy. The pharmacists are busy. And there happens to be a car that was behind us. And all of a sudden, I just noticed that the man got out of his car and he was standing outside of his car door, the driver's side of his car door. And he happened to be a white man, probably in his 50s. 40s, 50s, maybe something like that. And he started just staring. And then he started clapping his hands like, "Come on already, like get moving, come on." And I just thought that was kind of odd, but I'm like, all right, well, maybe he's just impatient today. You know, there's a lot going on. And then he goes to the back of his trunk and he opens his trunk. So again, I'm just watching because being extra vigilant these days. And he's rummaging around in his trunk and he pulls out a watermelon and he holds his watermelon up from behind the car and looks at me in my window. And I'm wondering, really? Is this supposed to mean something? You know, there's a lot of negative connotations when it comes to African Americans and watermelon, but I just kind of sat there again. He closes his trunk, comes back around. And then he starts cooing at me. He starts cooing like a monkey to my window from his car. And then I knew everything that he was doing and the reason why. And obviously it was because of the color of my skin. And it's not the first racist thing that's ever happened to me. I'm 35 years old. There's been many a times in my life that I've had to deal with racism. But just today, with everything, I don't know, something just broke. Because it's ridiculous that people have to put up with this all the time, every day, and you just deal with it. You deal with it, and you go. And it happens everywhere. We just have to be better. It's people like that man who was behind me in my car. That is the reason things are going on today. It's people like that, the reason that there's a problem. We just have to be better.
Hmm. That's Brittany Payton on Twitter. And I can't emphasize enough, that happened in Chicago yesterday. It could be, and you know, you can look outside your window right now and see your local, your pharmacy, wherever you go. That's just waiting in line at a Walgreens in Chicago yesterday. Yesterday. That's not Mississippi in 1962. It's here in Chicago in 2020. And we've all seen it. We've all seen various iterations of it. Hell, when I first heard that story, part of me wondered which one of our texters was that. Which one of the people on Twitter that I haven't muted or blocked who pops in every so often with something like that. One of the, you know, Peppy the Frog avatars. Which one was that? And we've all seen it. But we can't all feel it in the same way. That's the thing. That's what a lot of us have to work on, what a lot of us have to understand. And it's listening to these things. It's hearing them. It's trying to empathize. As difficult as it is, how would you feel with that stuff directed at you? And even, you know, those of us that have had anti-Semitic slurs and have our own ethnicities insulted, and we've all heard it. I hear it all the time on the text line and on Twitter, and, you know, Hitler should have thrown you in an oven too. That's fine. The difference is it doesn't happen when I walk into a room because of how I look, and that's why it's not an equivalency. People have been made fun of for all kinds of things. But this is different. When you know that just because of literally the color of your skin, something like this, the impunity and the fact that somebody could feel like they're actually motivated, not to think it, not to think grumbling to himself, which is bad enough, but to get out of the car. Does he keep a watermelon in his car just to do that? Wouldn't surprise me. And we have all seen it, but it was that's in Chicago yesterday. And that's no fun. Bernstein, why are you playing that? Well, because we need to hear stuff like that. We can't pretend it's not going on. We can't say that doesn't happen in my neighborhood or it doesn't affect me. That's the whole point of this. That's what we have to do. And I think there's a responsibility to amplify certain things. And while we do that, if I can turn a negative into something more positive, if in our role of amplifying good things or necessary things, we talked with Mark Lazarus yesterday about hockey players and about the significance of the statement that Jonathan Toews made and that Zach Smith made as well. But Braden Holtby, the goaltender for the Washington Capitals, I think it matters because he is in Washington. He's seeing what he's seeing from where he is. And he put out a short 4-paragraph statement that I just want to read to you ahead of the midday midway here. Braden Holtby. I stare at the Woodrow Wilson Bridge spanning across the Potomac River. From Virginia, it leads to Maryland, into Prince George's County, one of the most affluent black counties in America. And here, a monstrous bridge stands named after a racist president. A president who was outspoken as a white supremacist, who segregated federal workers based on race. The bridge sits there, mocking every black person who has to travel across it while reading that name, as a reminder of how much pain has been inflicted on their race. And yet, the society that has inflicted that pain seems proud of it. Proud enough to name a bridge in a white supremacist's honor. The injustice and hatred-infused power we've seen recently is anything but new. To say there have been improvements is very naive. In today's age of information and communication at our fingertips, the change is far too minimal. The amount of inhumane, hate-based, racial crimes that have been committed in the centuries of American history is enough to make your skin crawl in discomfort and your eyes well with tears. Yet, it is still happening in 2020. It should never happen, yet it still is. So now what? Where do we go from here? As a person who definitely falls into the white privilege category, I know I will truly never know what it's like to walk in a black man's shoes. But I know I have arms and ears and a voice to walk beside and listen to every word of anguish and give my strength to every black man, woman, or child until their shoes weigh the same as mine. For everyone standing up and marching for what is right, your voices are not going unheard. You're bringing pride to every person who believes in the universal value of a human being. Keep fighting. I vow to demonstrate and educate what you're fighting for, not only to myself, but my children, my family, and anyone else who will listen, because America will never be great until all black lives matter. That is Washington Capitals goaltender Braden Holtby. Yet another voice being added to a chorus of them across sports and elsewhere. How about we do a little bit of the midday midway? I have something that I discovered yesterday thanks to the New Yorker magazine that was just a little piece of joy that I didn't see coming, and it is a previously unpublished work by a great author that we have just been gifted and are now able to read. And also, there's a massive chunk of rock the size of the Empire State Building that's headed for Earth, but you don't have to think about that. Don't worry about it. Midday Midway, coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
So far on this show, we have talked about a lot of stuff. Some sports, some sports-ish. We began with the decision by Tom Ricketts to answer the phone when ESPN's Jesse Rogers called, and again, to start crying poor about how much money they don't have. We pour it all back in the park. It's the losses are biblical. Really, right now? Right now, you think that's what people want to hear? And then he also is forced to say that his brother Pete isn't racist, even though his brother Pete is obviously, by his own actions and words, kind of racist. What happened yesterday, and talked about some of the cognitive dissonance that Cub fans are having as all of this is going on and playing out. And also, we went back and revisited what Pete Ricketts said regarding a University of Nebraska player 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, who chose to kneel in the game here in Evanston against Northwestern. And when Pete Ricketts at the time decided to describe that as, make sure I get it absolutely correct, that his comments in that wake were disgraceful and disrespectful. Pete Ricketts called the kneeling Nebraska player disgraceful and disrespectful. And we've seen all the emails, too, and we know that he told black leadership, the problem I have with you people. So if the current Cubs owner wants to say that, well, I know he's not a racist, well, I don't know, because I kind of think he is. And the Cubs are saying, "Well, we don't have any money, and we're just losing all this money." It's just it's a tone deafness. That term also can be applied to Vic Fangio, as he was tripped up in discussing current events by saying, "Well, we don't see that in the NFL. I don't have any racism in my locker room." Well, how about when they leave the locker room? Maybe talk to some of your players who talked about being profiled by police. You should probably do that. We talked to Craig Edwards of Fangraphs. We talked to Mike Florio, who made a really good point about the Washington football team and what should be done right now that hasn't been done. And we also heard that harrowing story about what happened to Brittany Payton yesterday at a Chicago Walgreens. All right, you want something good in the world? Here is something. And I saw it on Twitter, and I had to make sure I knew what I was seeing. It's from the New Yorker. And it's a previously unpublished piece of or personalized fiction, biographical fiction, from Ernest Hemingway. And I said, this can't be real. Is this real? And it is. And I read it. It's a story called Pursuit as Happiness. And it's just vintage Hemingway writing about marlin fishing in Cuba and the pursuit of the big marlin. And then the New Yorker did a story about how they happened upon this, and they talked to Sean Hemingway, the grandson of Ernest Hemingway, and he says he was preparing a new Hemingway Library edition of The Old Man and the Sea. And he was going through an archive of manuscripts, letters, photographs, fishing logs from Hemingway's boat, and a bunch of things at the John F. Kennedy Library and Museum in Boston, which is the most important repository of Ernest Hemingway's stuff. And he found this single typewritten manuscript with emendations in his hand. And he said, I was surprised by it, excited by it, thought it would make a wonderful addition to the new edition. So it is going to be, and members of the new edition, it is going to be part of the new edition of The Old Man and the Sea. And he actually uses his own name. He refers to Ernest and Hemingway in his fishing trip with Mr. Josie, who is his nickname for his buddy Joe Russell, with whom he fished in Cuba. But Sean Hemingway does say that it's fiction in the same way that A Movable Feast is, where it's a work of fiction that's informed by and shedding light on actual events. And it is a perfect companion piece. We've all read The Old Man and the Sea, of course, or seen the movie, at least, I hope. And read it. It's really wonderful, and it takes you to a completely different place as powerfully and descriptively as only Ernest Hemingway can. But hey, new Hemingway, we'll take it. So I would advise you probably to duck. I don't know, because I saw this and at first thought, I thought, bring it on, because the headline is asteroid taller than the Empire State Building rocketing towards Earth at 11,200 miles per hour. Then I read the details and I realize this kind of happens more than we thought. But NASA is tracking a giant asteroid, which may be taller than the Empire State Building, and it is set to skim Earth's orbit this week. The Space Administration has dubbed the rock 163348-2002-NN4. That's no name. Come on, give it a name. Call it, like, you know, Al or something. I mean, give it a name. It's expected to rocket by us on Saturday. It is estimated to be between 250 meters and 570 meters. It could be taller than the Empire State Building. It's called an Aten, A-T-E-N asteroid, a space rock following a very wide orbit around the sun. Scientists do not think the asteroid will collide with Earth. Okay, well, that's good. But they're going to keep an eye on it in case it enters Earth's atmosphere by chance. It's expected to zoom past Earth at 8:20 a.m. British Standard Time Sunday, traveling at a speed of 11,200 miles per hour. And it will approach Earth at a distance of 13.25 lunar distance, roughly 5.1 million kilometers or 3.2 million miles away. Despite its distance, NASA deems the space rock a near-Earth object, as it deems all asteroids as NEOs if they approach Earth within 1.3 astronomical units. It'll come back in 2024. They're currently tracking 2,000 asteroids, comets, and other objects which threaten our planet. Earth hasn't seen an asteroid of apocalyptic scale, or biblical scale, if Tom Ricketts asked, since the space rock that wiped out the dinosaurs 66 million years ago. So we're doing okay then. It's been 66 million years, so for now, we're probably all right in that regard. But yeah, I guess keep an eye on it, or if you have a book to put on your head, perhaps would be an idea. Might be a really good time to put a book on your head, because Terry would advise that.
Whoa, look out! Ducks! Whoa!
Where does this rank on a world record? And I do say, I love citrus fruits. I love lemon-flavored anything. lemon sorbet, lemon pie, lemon meringue pie, lemon drops, lemon candies, you know, vodka and lemon juice, whatever it might be. An Idaho man drank a liter of lemon juice through a straw in under 17 seconds to set a Guinness World Record. And this is a guy named David Rush who does this. He's broken more than 100 Guinness World Records to promote STEM education. He emptied a glass containing a whole liter of 100% lemon juice in 16.53 seconds, which bested the previous record of 17.12 seconds set by Andre Orthoff, noted lemon juice speed drinker. Could you do it, you think? Like, how much lemon juice could you conceivably actually drink?
About, like, damage your stomach lining and your esophagus, and isn't that the acid level on it has to be brutal?
Yeah, I would think so. He said he kept...
Like, if I drink too much lemonade, I get that feel a little bit. Like, ugh, like my throat feels a little scratchy or whatever from it.
Yeah, he said he kept from throwing up after finishing the juice, but his stomach discomfort lasted until the next day. Yeah, yeah. I remember as a little kid, as a toddler, my parents would tell the story. They said that when there'd be a cocktail party at the house or something, and they would set out garnishes, you know, lemons and limes, where for whatever, I loved chewing on lemons and limes from a very young age. You know, you just get that sort of intensity of flavor. And eventually, they said, the dentist said, you know, definitely don't do that, because the worst thing that can happen, that kind of exposure, it burns the enamel off of your teeth. And especially kids' teeth, I guess. I don't know if they're more porous or more susceptible to it for whatever reason, but they say that it's bad for kids to do that with, and even, you know, doing like the Vito Corleone orange slice in the mouth. It's not quite as acidic, but that's apparently not good for kids' teeth either. So yeah, you're taking the fun out of that. But I would think if you could get the straw positioned so as not to wreck your teeth, because you end up looking like a meth head after that.
Well, I already have nothing to lose.
And lastly, if you're going to try to hide $22,000 worth of cocaine, don't bury it in the forest where it can be discovered by feral pigs. That's your piece of advice for today. Italian police had been probing a gang of suspected drug dealers who apparently decided to then hide their cocaine in Italy's countryside that is infested with wild boar. And I don't know if our feral hogs here, that is famously in, you know, the meme, the reason why people feel that they need to have assault weapons and multiple guns just in case the feral hogs show up. The other piece of advice here, first of all, if and when you go to Italy, especially Tuscany, and wild boar is on the menu, get it. Get it, get it, get it. They call it cingale. And whether it is in a ragu with pappardelle, or whether it's chops or it chunks in a fricassee of some kind, get cingale, because it's awesome. It's like the porkiest pork that ever porked. It's great. But apparently, these are a bit of a scourge. So they have hid a stash of $22,000 worth of cocaine. It was hidden in the woods, and it was destroyed by a horde of wild boars. The violent reclamation by Mother Nature was discovered after police wiretapped members of the gang, and they overheard them complaining about the damage to their product. They arrested three Albanian suspects and an Italian suspect rather swiftly thereafter. The animals ripped into a sealed package of cocaine and proceeded to litter the nearby woodlands with its powdery contents. The drugs originally came from Perugia before being hidden in the Tuscan forest near Montepulciano. Oh, talk about a great red wine, too. Inexpensive, wonderful red wine. If you ever get the chance, Montepulciano d'Abruzzo or Vino Nobile de Montepulciano, next time you shop for wine and you want something a little different. I am so hungry right now. My God. So it was in the forest near, actually, Montepulciano, while being peddled around Arezzo. The gang had been prolific before the arrest. They sold 2 kilos per month, between $90 and $120 per gram. I'd have to do the math on that. I'm sure I could, but I don't want to. And police were correct in their assumptions when there was a murder of a 21-year-old Albanian. And they wired these guys up and they probed them. And they were, one of the gang members was using a nightclub to peddle his wares. So the wild boars, they found it and they scattered it everywhere. Now, the question is when do the twitchy, nervous wild boars then themselves show up at the nightclub? And that is the midway. We've got an NBA plan, it looks like. It reports that the NBA and the Board of Governors, everybody is going to vote on this 22-team plan to bring everybody back to Orlando. That is scheduled for in the middle of the day tomorrow. And it looks like they're going to Disney World, and they're going to do something here. And 22 teams, not including your Chicago Bulls. We can thank heavens for that. Keith Smith of Yahoo is going to give us the latest on that proposal and how this is all going to work. He is a former Disney employee who's got all the information about how this, what the logistics of this may be. He's going to join us next on The Score.
Molly
and Haw here.
A lot of us aren't driving to work right now.
That means no car radio, but you still can start your day with us from the comfort of your home. Listen on your radio, your laptop, your mobile device through the radio.com app, or tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score.
You can always count on us for the latest Chicago sports stories. We're live, local, and we're keeping Chicago connected.
Molly and Haw, mornings 5 to 9 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
Chicago Sports Station.
Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.